Good evening, everyone. Happy Shabbat. I am Yada. I'm here with the full cast of characters, and I underscore characters. We have Larry with us tonight. We have JB, who is celebrating the pregnancy of his wife, Patty, and is enjoying that process. And we have our favorite artist and contributor to Yada Yada, Kirk.
Good evening.
Good evening. Boy, I missed last Shabbat program. I was in an airplane flying down to Waco, Texas last week to where I had my eldest son with me, and we were meeting my youngest son. I really had a celebration of the family. It was a wonderful time. But boy, did I ever receive a bunch of emails saying that Larry, that Elise, who I know really as Lisa, was spectacular in terms of her contribution to the show, and that that everyone appreciated you having her on, interviewing her, and allowing her to tell her story, because it's a perspective that we don't get very often.
And that's right. And Elise really is spectacular in that way. Yeah. She really is.
I know her as a woman who is especially inquisitive, resolutely determined to find the truth, relentless until she does find the truth, and she shares a passion that many of us have that are part of the covenant. She despises the religious buffoons that have lied to her and lied to her people in the past. And she holds a tremendous animosity toward them. At least that was my impression. And I view that as highly favorable when somebody is adverse to those who have misled many. And so she is similar to many of, and if not most of, the Israelites who have become members of the covenant. We really are not all the same. There is a distinctive benefit to being a Israelite, and they're special people. God made them special, and I'm always thrilled to be in their company. So thank you for doing that.
Oh yeah, yes, certainly. It was my pleasure, and I'm sure she'll call in more often. You know, perhaps.
Okay, I want to talk about something we talked about before the show began, and then Larry, I know you want to tell a story. We were talking. You mentioned something that is near and dear to my heart, because I am somebody who once tried to present myself this way, and now laugh at the concept.
Sure.
In Christianity and in religion in general, there's this thought that if you're good, God will go out of his way to favor you. And my response is, well, am I glad that's not the case? Because I never, ever, on my best day, would ever claim to be good. And then you said that, well, maybe it's better to be kind than it is good. And I said, well, I'm glad that's not the criterion either. Because I would never consider myself as kind, and I would absolutely never consider myself as good. And what I told you was something that I think resonates, because it is consistent with Dode. I told you that I would much rather be right than I would be kind or good. And because
but that's
if I'm
what
right,
is according that, to Yahweh.
Well, you know, what did Yahweh say of Dode? Did he say that Dode was kind?
No.
Did he say Dode was good? Did Dode claim to be kind?
No.
Did Dode claim to be good?
Nope.
In fact, Dode was not kind, and Dode was not good. But Dode was right. When Yahweh said that, spoke of Dode, he said he was Tzedak. You know what Tzedak means? The basis, and you were just to get right down to the fundamental aspect of Tzedak. You know what it means?
Right.
Yeah, to be right. It means to be right. Now, it has some other connotations. It means to be upright. It means to be righteous. But what are upright and righteous based upon what word?
Texas, Timmy.
Right. Well, no. Right. Upright and righteous are based upon this concept of being right. Dode was right with God because he rightly understood what God had to say. I want to tell you, being right on what God said and being right on how you respond to him, I think, is vastly superior by a billion, billion, billion to one than being kind or good.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, yeah, and that's true. When I tell you, I wasn't trying to, pull the wool over anybody's eyes, because people that run around with a pure heart, I actually had a couple of those clowns today. You know, they got on the notes, and boy, they wanted to learn, and they were passing them around, and then it turned out they were part of a group that's doing a communion together, and they're all going to be forcefully. Well, no kidding. I said, this is a joke, right? I mean, they invited me to their page, and no. I mean, it's like prayer. It's something you want to do a communion
today. Well,
right. I said, we're out of here.
Right. Yeah. Where does Yahweh say that it's right to pray?
Nowhere.
Never. Nowhere. Where does Yahweh say that it's right to have communion?
Nowhere. That I'm aware
nowhere.
Of.
No, nowhere. The answer is nowhere. But, you know, it is. I think it is easy. I'm gonna underscore that. It can be relatively easy to be right. To be right, I mean, I don't want to push it off like it's a pushover. It's something you can do half-heartedly. To be right, you've got to be willing to invest the time. You've got to be the right frame of mind. You've got to view things from the right perspective. And you've got to go to the right source.
And the right perspective is always Yahweh's perspective.
Of course, the perspective of Yahweh, the right source is the Torah, and the right way to go about it is to Shamar, closely examine and carefully consider what he has to say. But if you have the right perspective, which is Yahweh's, and I discount all others as meaningless, and you go to the right source, which is the Torah, and you apply the right technique, which is to Shamar, closely examine and carefully consider, and you exercise your ability to discern between right and wrong, which is your nesama, then you are going to be sufficiently right to be considered in a right relationship with Yahweh and to be considered righteous and upright with Yahweh. And that's really all that matters. We don't do this show. I cannot tell you why many people listen to the show. I can tell you I only participate in this show for a singular reason, and that is that I think it's important to have a right, correct understanding of what Yahweh said and to respond to him in the right way. And the best way to do that is to consider what he had to say in his Torah. That's the only reason I participate in the show.
Yeah, and you know, to bring the right perspective, we got to look at the perspective from his angle. I mean, that's
right.
There really is to it. I had a guy today on FB that said, oh, no, I don't want these answers. I don't want these answers. I want to hear from you, yes or no. And I said, well, you know, why does it matter what I think? I'm showing you Yahweh's words. Are you telling me that my words somehow outweigh his words? I mean, are you that gone? That's what I asked him. He was just another religious buffoon, and he was running around with Yahweh's name as his profile. And, you know, there's a lot of people that now know Yahweh's name, you know.
Right.
And, of course,
a significantly growing number that actually know that it's not Yahweh, that it's Yahweh.
Yeah, right. They'll even, you know, bring up the U as opposed to the O.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that a huge part of that is the work that we did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yes.
Yeah, I think that. Absolutely. I think that people have taken it sometimes and gone into some misguided directions. But the analysis that was done in Yada Yada that we presented in this program and in the introduction to God, which demonstrates conclusively that Yahweh's name is pronounceable by examining the other words in the Hebrew language that use the same vowels and concentrating on those words that are the best known and that are irrefutable, you very quickly come to a conclusion that Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh is pronounced Yahweh, that there really isn't any way to refute that based upon the evidence that Yahweh has laid before
us. Well,
related to Torah.
Yeah, when you look at names that hold Yahweh's name in a contraction, they're all in O.
Right.
So
yeah, we're going to talk about a number of those today. For example, we have Yoab. Yah is our father. Yoel, Yahweh is God. Yob, cry out to Yah. Yobal, Yah leads and carries. Yotah, Yah gives life. Yokal, Yah is able. Yonah, which is Yah's dove. Yonathan, Yah gives. Yosef, Yah increases. Yoed, Yah's meeting. Yorah, Yah instructs. Yotham, Yah perfects. And there's some of those that there's absolutely no question that it's Yoab, Yoel, Yob, Yonah, Yothan, Yosef. There is a 0% possibility that the Yo in those names is invalid.
Yeah.
Just as if there's a 0% possibility that the O sound from the Wa in Shalom and Torah and Goy and Goyim is invalid. So
yeah, it's not
dumb. That's the only letter that's even possibly in dispute, because there is some cases where the Wa could be pronounced as a double U, as a U. All you really have to do is take the most important words, particularly the words that are contractions of Yahweh's name, to get Yahweh. If it were Yub, if it were Yuna, if it were Yub, if it were UL, then I think you might have an argument. And if it was Tura, and if it was Shulom, I think you'd have the basis of an argument.
Right, but you got to understand that there are people with that delusion that run around FB, not as many as used to be. I pounded out a lot of notes on, Yub and Dura and speaking
right.
Like Barney Rubble. You know, I mean,
right.
It's just at some point it's just stupid. It's old man talk,
Yeah, what I would be willing to say for those that want it to be Yahuwah as opposed to Yahuwah is that based upon the most common Hebrew words, the words that we know have been handed down by mouth to ear over time, Torah, Yoel, Yob, for example, and Shalom, as well as even Goy and Goyim, that the likelihood of the O is overwhelmingly superior to the likelihood of the U. And so while I wouldn't say the U is impossible, I would say that it has a likelihood of less than 5%.
Would you agree that if Yahweh, if it was not so with all this evidence, that Yahweh would have to be a rather poor communicator and a bad teacher?
Well, since the single
it's overwhelming.
Since the single most important term to him is following Bereth and following his name is Torah.
Torah.
And since Torah means guidance and teaching and direction, for him to have come up with Torah and for it to be improper guidance, teaching, and direction on how to pronounce his name, I would say that I would lose some respect for Yahweh's ability to guide, to teach, and instruct if it's not Yahweh. I would say you missed on that one. It's not like you to miss out on a prime objective. Yeah, it's not in his nature to miss out on that. And yes, I would. Yeah, saying that you would have less respect for Yahweh when you have ultimate respect for him is not much of a nick. But yes, rationally, you'd have to say, my respect would be diminished by some minute amount, but would be diminished if he did not properly communicate how to pronounce his name via Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so...
it's also not a Yovel year, is it?
It is not a Yovel year, no. It is not a Yovel year.
Very good.
Yeah, no. It is not. No.
I mean, it really gets down to the ridiculous. There are things that just irk me when I see stuff like this. It's people imitating somebody else that's wrong. And, you know, there's a lot of this nonsense. I mean, you know, after people found out that, you know, Amen was based on Amun-Ra, they started writing A-M-E-I-N and punctuating it at the end of their statements. You know,
I'm going to piece on that this week because
it just burns my ass.
Yeah,
you know, we're called to be set apart. We're not called to imitate
right.
the
If you're going to write everything in Hebrew, then you better be communicating to not only an audience that is conversant in Hebrew, but an audience that is conversant in the Hebrew of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Otherwise, words you need to translate. That's like somebody writing Elohim as opposed to Almighty or God. It's a word. Translate words. If you're going to communicate in English about a Hebrew concept, translate the words and transliterate the names. You are making a fool of yourself when you transliterate the words as if that transliterated word is important to know. Unless
they use it like magic.
Now there are two exceptions to that. What are the two exceptions to translating
entitled names?
There you go.
So they're not doing it out of stupidity. They're doing it to be deceptive. Because if you transliterate it, and just a simple word, you transliterate it, now it's a foreign word. That allows you to define it in any. It's the same thing with baptism. You know, taking it and turning it into baptism, now you can define it as the ceremony in this whole parade of things that has nothing to do with what it was meant.
Because with baptism, you're taking a Greek word, which is always the wrong thing to do. You ought never take a Greek word. Like apostle, like disciple, like baptism, like charis, the charity. You ought never take a Greek word and transliterate it unless it is even if it's a title. Because it's the title of something that has a Hebrew title. And so you ought never transliterate any Greek word unless it's just to say, I'm trying to teach here the Greek word is ecclesia. That's the transliteration. The meaning of the word is to call out. And
that was about the only one ever worth translating, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. I mean that.
Yeah, I translated it correctly into Hebrew. I translated it into Mikra. Now, that said, Mikra is an example of a Hebrew word that we use a lot. And I'm as likely to use Mikra as I am invitations to be called out.
Well, I definitely use Mikra because people need to understand what that means and put it in their lexicon and use it.
It's a title. So since it's the title of Yahweh's seven invitations, and since it's Yahweh's chosen title, it's an appropriate word to transliterate. Because it's a title. You ought to be really careful and just don't throw around the title as a foreign word that people don't understand. If you're going to transliterate it as a title, be sure, particularly with an audience that if you're talking to the covenant, members of the covenant, you can use Bereth, covenant, without translating it. If you're talking to someone outside the covenant family, I think both Mikra and Bereth need to be translated in addition to being transliterated if we're going to be effective guys.
Well, in any of the notes I put out, it's explaining what they are. I don't just say Mikra. I say, you know, they begin in the spring at Pesach and, you know, end in the seventh month with Sukkah. These are called out invitations. They're celebrations. They're not punishing religious
Invitations to meet with God. To be called out and meet with God isn't any better than that. Hey, by the way, we were talking about Sadak at the beginning of the show, to be right, to be upright.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the first letter of most words is the most important in Hebrew, defining aspect of what it means to be Sadak, upright. You know what the first letter is of Sadak? To be right, to be upright. Well, no, it's not just the T. The T-S. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. T-S. T-S, yeah.
You know what the T-S is symbolic of in Hebrew?
Zion, probably.
Right, yeah. And you know what Zion is?
That's a signpost along the way.
All right. You want to be right? Yeah. Read the signpost along the way.
Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked.
And the Torah.
You know, it's like looking at what they did. You want to really look at the signpost? It's so funny the way Yahweh sets these things up. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. I mean, he knows what they're going to do before they do it. So when they take Shimon and turn him into Petros, the place full of idols over there, you know, and you show this to people, and this is in your book named after the sun god Biblia, you know, they run away. I think they're embarrassed. I said, you know, is this a sign of any kind? You know, Bible, Babel, they share the same root word, confusion.
Right.
Are you there? Everything okay?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're, it's
yeah, Bible and Babylon, the Babel, which is the basis, the Hebrew basis of Babylon, is Babel. And Babel and Bible share the same root. The same,
absolutely.
The three-letter root is the basis of about 90% of Hebrew words. In fact, it's true, really, of almost all ancient languages, that there's three letters in almost every language that define the root. For example, Beirut, the single most important word in Yahweh's lexicon, it's based on the three-letter root of Beirut, family. But almost every Hebrew word is based upon its three-letter root, and Bible is based, the three-letter root is based on Babel, confusion. Absolutely true.
But, you know, I didn't want to say when I said what I said. There's a big difference between being good and being goody-goody. And the only way I know to be good is to get on the path. Because by myself, I'm like anybody else.
Right.
I don't know how much changes. You know, when you think about the size and the scope and the brilliance of the creator of the universe, how much difference is there between one person and another, other than one responds to them and one doesn't?
Yeah, I think there is a, for the average individual, for 999,999 out of a million, I think that there's very little difference in people. I do think there is a tremendous difference as it relates to being part of the covenant. When you're part of the covenant, there's an empowerment. There's an enrichment. There is a nobility. There is a depth of character and understanding that is vastly different than people as a whole.
Yeah, well, there's a reality. You know, somebody asked, I mean, this has been asked more than once, what's the difference between us and somebody else? And what do you think the common denominator is? And you know how you start on the path and you say one thing, it's not wrong, but, you know, you later find out that there's more to it. And really, you know, I've said many times that we all search for the truth, but it goes a little beyond that because we didn't just search for the truth. When we found the truth, we thought about it. We could recognize it. And we embraced it.
Understood it.
We might accept it at first, but eventually, come on now, you've embraced it. Because if you lost the truth right now, who would you be?
Nobody.
I mean, I could ask that of anyone.
Right.
Yeah, you'd just be like the guy next door.
Well, you know, it goes beyond seeing the truth. And that's the thing that's impossible for people who are religious and political. They're unwilling to accept the truth because it means they have to let go of their lies of politics and religion, militarism, economic schemes. But so, first of all, you've got to be passionate about knowing the truth. And if you're not passionate about wanting to know the truth, you're not going to invest the time never learn the truth. Second, you've got to be open to the truth. As well, Yahweh says, the Torah is easy to understand for those who are open-minded. If you're not open to the truth, it will make no difference. It's not going to resonate. You'll have no benefit. But there is something beyond coming to know the truth and accepting the truth. And that is it creates a situation, Larry and Kurt, that makes it impossible to have the scenario, the hypothetical that you just mentioned. You said, what would I be if I lost the truth? Well, I can't lose the truth because I went beyond accepting the truth. I incorporated the truth. It's like when Yahweh says, I'm going to write my Torah inside of you. I'm going to make my Torah part of the fabric of your life. At that point, you can't separate yourself from the Torah. Once you come to accept Yahweh's perspective, his teaching, his guidance, his covenant, you literally interweave it into the fabric of your life. You integrate it. And so we become a living manifestation of the truth. So you can't lose it.
You're trying to be... Go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was just going to say, I view it as like no longer being blind. Everything is my perspective now. It doesn't matter what I go to. There's a lot of things I don't know and don't get at the depth of that others might or I hope to get later. But my perspective is not wrong. I know exactly what Yahweh likes most, likes best, wants me to know, and what his concepts are, and what he's doing, and where we are, and where we're going. So it's fair. I mean, you can't watch the news and not know. Once you've studied so much, you can't watch the news and not know what everything is happening, and why it's happening, and what. Yeah. So it's just. So I'm not. I feel like I'm no longer blind. I just walk around. I see everything clearly in the light of the way it really is.
Well, you know, we sat around and you know, Yada, in the past, you've talked about, you know, you get something and you're trying to work it out, and you know, you think about it and you chew on a word, and then the next time you're in the shower, it hits you, okay? And I know what that's like. You know, when I was younger, I was constantly getting that on different things. Well, this is a lie, this is a lie, this is a lie. This is good. This lie, this lie, this lie. And, you know, in the Torah, it seems to come in, you know, almost like, it comes in pieces at first, and then pretty soon it starts coming in landslides. You know what I'm talking about here.
Right, yeah, sure.
Where everything you look at, and you're really communing. I mean, you know, you're not even reading the words at that moment, but you're sitting there, you know, considering the words, and you're communing in mighty ways. I mean, I know you know what that feels like,
right?
Because
sure.
I've gone through it, and the more gain I get, you know, the more realistic everything becomes, the better it always gets. It's always better and better. I mean, I'm just going to give you one example. You know, you remember all the animals we went over, which were really representations of worldly matrices that are in opposition to Yahweh.
Yeah, we're talking about the animals that were listed as this is not food.
This is not what you want to consume. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Yeah, this is something you want to consume. And again, one or two of those had a combination meaning where there was a legitimate beastie by that description that was unhealthy to eat for most of human existence, while also representing symbolically the things that Yahweh was opposed to that are unhealthy for us spiritually. Well, all the rest only did not have were not names or descriptive of actual living animals, but only had a connotation that could be discerned spiritually.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. But at the same time, you know, you just people will say things very, you know, just flippantly almost. You know, I watch a lot of animal shows. I watch hundreds of them actually. And I sit and watch how species invade places, and you know they change the ecosystem and everything else. And you know you hear this was one of them that just hit me this week, and I was just sitting there watching it, and it just all started coming together. You know, they talked about the catfish. They don't specifically say catfish, but they say, you know, without scales.
No scales.
And people will say, no, I don't eat cat food. That's a bottom feeder. They eat trash. Well,
yeah,
you know,
that's true. They are bottom feeders. They do eat trash.
Well, it's true to a degree, but they're actually a predator.
So do lobster, so do clams, so do, you know, scallops.
Yeah, well, I just want to point something out specifically about a catfish. There's more to it than that. They're a predator. They're a predator. I mean,
yeah,
a major predator. If you go into the Amazon or if you go over into Spain, into the main river there, some of those are growing 8 feet
large
long
fish
now.
Yeah.
And
they've been on
the I got to thinking about it, and I thought, wait a minute. It's not that a catfish just eats garbage. I'm sure it will. It eats everything.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It's prolific. It goes everywhere and eats everything. So what it really is to me, what that represented more than anything, is political correctness. I'm serious.
Yeah, it
eats
everything. It eats anything. Yeah, devours.
Yeah, I don't even think it was a religious
Catholic church that joins with him.
Yeah. Yeah, and a catfish will eat rubbish. It'll eat scum, and it'll go after anything that is living as well. Yeah. Yeah, the Catholic church.
Yeah, it's a major predator.
Amalgamation of everything.
And yeah, right. It's a major predator.
Right. But you know something else that'll eat everything? Almost anything you give it, it'll eat is a pig.
A pig. I was going to say that.
Will a goat.
If a farmer
so
has a pig, he will be eaten.
Sheep are good. Goats are bad. Yeah, a goat will eat everything. That's why there's a scapegoat. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. That is all very true. But, you know, it's just things that feed you. And you see them, and you realize what's going on, you know, as you watch them. Because you're considering the words. And you can consider the words even though you're not reading them. You spend a great deal of time trying to consider the words, right?
Right, right. No, I just like Tzedak. You know, what's unique about Tzedak? Well, that it means to be right. So how are you going to be upright with Yahweh? Well, to be right. Well, how are you going to be right with Yahweh? To turn to the right place, use the right technique from the right perspective with the right mindset, and you're going to end up being right.
Right.
So,
you know,
it is actually fun.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's overwhelmingly fun as you're fed. You know when your Nesama's interacting with the Ruach, or at least I do.
You do. Yep.
You know, it comes out of nowhere. So it just starts, it's like a floodgate opens for you. But it's interesting stuff. It really is. All the way down. And that's why the Torah is lovable. That's why, you know, Dode spent days in the Torah thinking and consuming and understanding.
Yeah.
Because as these insights and understandings are fed to us, it's a beautiful thing. You even feel
I don't want to diminish the benefit of being good. Well, I am not good, and Dode never claimed to be good, and Yahweh never claimed that Dode was good. He does claim that his Torah is Tob. And the Hebrew word
good.
It doesn't just mean good. It means beneficial. It means healing. It means helpful. Yeah, truthful.
Yeah, those are good things in my mind.
Good things. Yeah, Yahweh is good. Yahweh's direction is good. You know, there's bad direction, Babel, and there's good direction, the Torah. So the Torah is good, and the Torah makes us appear good before Yahweh. But, you know, it's... Would we define ourselves as good? No. Would we define the Torah as good? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, it's about the path. It's not about the man, other than the fact the man decided to take the path. And woman, too.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the men and women that take the path. I think they're fascinating individuals. So I think there is a lot. I think Yahweh doesn't want us to diminish our uniqueness, our personas, our perspectives, the things that make us unique is part of what Yahweh celebrates when we are part of the
government. Right, but isn't that what religion does? Doesn't it try to do the same thing as public school system? There's a norming
process. Yeah, tries to make everybody the same.
Right.
And in the Torah, I think what the Torah is doing is trying to keep us all different.
Yeah,
we're all the same in terms of our understanding, in terms of our being right with Yahweh, but we're all totally and completely different, and that's the last thing as I would want is for us to be the same. The more different we are, the better it is.
Mm-hmm.
The more enriching,
right.
The more fun it's going to be. You know, I don't want to
be more interesting
like
and fun is the bottom line.
For example,
I mean, you know.
I like Kirk. I don't want to be like Kirk.
I don't
the more
either.
Kirk is, the more,
I don't
the more Kirk is different than I am. I'm not, you know, does Kirk have some characteristics that are better than mine? Yes, but I don't want to be Kirk. I want to spend eternity with Kirk. You know, but I don't want Kirk
this
to
show
be like
we
me.
Were all four the same people.
Yeah,
this
you know,
a pretty important show.
We have broken bread together down there in Texas, James, and. You have lots of characteristics that are significantly better than my counterpart. And yet I don't want to be like you. And I would never encourage you to be like me. The fact that we're different in our best discussions is when we disagree.
Mm-hmm. That's when we learn the most.
Oh, of course. It's the most interesting. And it's not threatening. You know, I've never once said, you know, we disagree and I think that, you know, you're wrong here and that you need to straighten up and accept it the way that I'm sharing it with you. Never once. No, it's good to disagree on some of the...
That's never been your thing either. I mean, that's not what you do. What you do is share the words that you chewed on and share your insights on them.
Yeah.
And I've found invariably... I agree. I just agree. You know, I've been called a win bot, you know, so what?
You know. Well, you know, I would tell you that you're about as irascible a guy as there comes. You are about as far from a follower as humanity has. You would have to look
long
and hard to find a more independent individual that would never acquiesce to the authority of another. Now, first of all, I don't want you to acquiesce to me ever, and I never claim authority. But you are the furthest from that. It's one of the reasons I like you so much. Man, I could no more influence you than the man on the moon and would never try. However, Yahweh sure as heck can.
Oh, well, Yahweh's words and insights into them certainly have changed my life. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. I don't have to guess where I stand anymore. I know where I stand.
Yeah.
And
you know, what's interesting is kind of this idea of being a win-bot. You know, my only the purpose of every one of the books, the purpose of every one of the translations, the purpose of all of the insights that are shared are simply to say, here's what Yahweh said. This is the what these words mean. These are alternatives on what these words mean. Here's how I came to the conclusion of what the words mean and don't mean. And here are some things to think about in terms of other things that Yahweh said relative to these words and this statement. And that we ought to think about this. And based upon all of this, here are my conclusions. I'm not claiming to be right. I'm just saying here's my conclusions based upon the connections that can be made based upon the proper definitions and translations of these words in the context of the discussion that they are found in.
You know, some of those breakdowns you did were pretty amazing, especially when I first saw them and now looking at what all they tie into. You know, I mean, it's not just saying, you know, academically, this is how the word can be broken down, because that's how you get into all kinds of bad translations. You have to think about it. You really have to think about it.
Yeah, you don't want to rely on any human institution or any human resource. What you want to use, what you want to do is you want to deploy as many resources as are available and then to think about the common denominator or the actionable view of it or the prior use of the word from the proper perspective, which is Yahweh's perspective in his Torah. And when you do that, you're going to be right more times than not. But it requires a lot of filtering and a lot of observation and thinking. And so that's, you know, I think I began the style of these books all for the purpose of encouraging others to go through this process with me. You know, I never expected, and I don't think it's ever happened, that I have led people, that I have led blind people by the hand. And instead, I'm saying, okay, we're going to go and we're going to study this. And I try to write in a style that we're in this together. And let's think about this, and let's look at the possibilities, and let's do this together. And I think that's the way that if we're all bots, if we're all trying to be consistent with and programmed by, then since the entire subject matter is Yahweh's Torah and prophets and Psalms, then we're Yahbots. That's okay with
that's
me.
That's good.
That's good.
Now, along those lines, Sadak, of course, is, the TS, of course, is a man lying down in
the
doorway.
Well, what's
in
the
Q? Cloth.
What's the Q? What is the Q?
Yeah. The Q,
what's the Q?
Of course, is that the waiting on something. The Q was rising from
rising light. The an increase in light. Right.
Enlightenment.
So it's the signpost along the way to enlightenment and to being enlightened, right?
And but it's nice that the man is lying down. He's not, he's waiting, resting, being renewed in the doorway.
Yeah, but when you're studying Yah's testimony, when you're reading it, you're looking at the letters and what the letters comprise, and you're thinking about the words and each of the words, are you typically jogging along the street while you're doing it?
No, I'm sitting down.
Are you in your car driving?
Hardly.
No, are you playing basketball?
No.
No. So when you're studying Yahweh's words, are you sitting down or standing up?
I'm usually sitting down.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah,
that person is sitting down there,
You have to really concentrate.
Yeah.
You have to spend a lot of time with
Yah. Yahweh wants you to move with him, to journey with him, to walk with him. But the way that you journey and walk with him in our world is really when you sit down and study his words. That he's taking your soul and your mind on that journey. And so that's the reason that person appears motionless, appears stationary, is that the format by which you study his words. That's where the signposts along the way are the most readily discernible, so that we can stand up and reach up and walk with him. But there are times when you're focused on the signposts that you need to sit down and look at what the letters say.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah,
I like that. I wrote that down.
Well, the Torah is, it's coming at us with Torah codes, really. It's coming at us with names strung together that actually create sentences when they're put side by side. There's the overall plan. There's the Yovel. There's so much
from you. The Q, because I was so desirous of getting to the Q, which is really the defining aspect of what the signpost is leading us to.
Right.
There's actually a D also in the dock, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, so the doorway, the bath.
Yeah.
Oh, the bath.
Yeah. So this is a signpost to the doorway to enlightenment.
But you could say, here's someone sitting studying the family business, the family program, the family bias covenant, and being in
the doorway to life. The doorway to Yahweh's home.
Doorway to life, yeah.
Yeah, Honing has written down upright, vindicated, righteous, right, walking toward the light, / Yah.
Right.
And that's true, too. I mean, that's what's happening here. And,
right.
And
when Yahweh says that Dod was righteous, the reason I don't like the word righteous very much is because righteous has a religious connotation.
Religious connotation.
He wasn't saying that he was righteous in the sense of he was religious. He's saying that he's right and that he's upright, not bowing down and groveling. But most important, what Sadak says, that he was right. Right.
Yeah, right. That,
when it comes
whole
to Yahweh's guidance and participating in the covenant and understanding the perspective and the guidance that Yahweh has to offer, there is nothing that's more important than us being right.
Mm-hmm. Well, even the Latin roots, it just means straight. It's rec, where we get righteous. It's from there.
Okay, it means straight. Okay, so the original Latin wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Straightforward.
I mean, it's straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's a straight, Yahweh doesn't communicate and the serpent paths. Yeah, it's a straight path. So, straight would be.
It was a good word for the religious people got hold to it.
That is correct.
Or it could have been. Yeah.
Well, the religious people have a tendency to misread, misguide, and destroy everything. When somebody says he's a righteous man to me, I right away, almost my
vomit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
Yahweh didn't call Dod righteous. Yahweh called Dod right. He called him upright.
Yeah.
He said that because he has paid attention to the signposts along the way, he has recognized and accepted and entered through the doorway to enlightenment, to Yahweh's light. That's what the letters reveal. That's what Yahweh was saying. Powerful. Now, Larry, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about, you said you had a story you wanted to tell. And we have...
Oh, yeah. This is
telling your story.
No. Not at all. There's... you had brought up a name there, Yob. Cry out to Yahweh. We had a situation here last week, at the start of this week, where a covenant member over in South Africa was in a situation where she had been working for a Christian family for a number of years. They had pretty much got her in there just to be a caretaker of the grounds. Then they decided, we've all heard of room and board. You get room, but no board.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we want you to do. And then they fired their gardener, took his contract away and said, you're going to do that now. Well, over a series of, say, 5 years, there was a number of things that happened. It was supposedly a little summer home. They decided to build a church. They sent orphans over there, eight of them, to spend a weekend as an example. And, the water was turned off because they didn't pay their water bill. And, she's sitting over there looking after 8 orphans. She's got a child of her own, anyway, by the name of Angel. He's 11 years old. And it finally got to a point with her, where all they could eat, all she could, because another covenant member out in need herself was sending roughly 4,000 rand a year, which amounts to nothing. If you want to divide that by 12, you'll see what that is in dollars to eat with.
Mm-hmm.
Her son became septic because, they were eating, they had to buy older vegetables that were about to be thrown away. And primarily their meal, when they had one, was potatoes, for the most part. This went on for the last 5 years. She's been a member of our group and never brought it up.
Wow.
She had it out with them.
Uh-huh.
Because they were building a church, and she... And I don't know too many people in that weak position with a child that actually went septic that would sit there and say, I know you're building a church, but I'm going to tell you right now, God has a name, and it's not Lord, and it's not Jesus.
And he doesn't have a
church. And after that,
he doesn't have a church.
Right, but they went after her. I'm talking about standing on Yahweh's name here. This is, this is tough.
Yes.
It got to the point, though, that they just stopped paying for the place. Didn't bother to tell her. They didn't have electric. They didn't have water. And anyway, Elise found out about it and put her in a thing to fund my cause. And she, wrote a story, the truth, that her and her son were going to be out on the street in South Africa with nothing. I mean, they don't even have clothes, okay? So, we posted that, you know, in Unpopular. In 1 week, we raised 892 English pounds. And then Sandy and Jackie and a few others actually sent moneygrams as well. Bottom line is that, you know, it's GoFundMe.com is the name of it. But the bottom line is that here's a woman who had nothing. She was probably three or four, maybe five days, you know, from the time she left that home with nothing and no food and a little 11-year-old boy, probably a week away from dead, to tell you the truth.
Wow.
If you don't have a car and you don't have food and you don't have any way to get these things, you're going to die. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, you
are. That's it. Yeah. And, you know, she contacted me and asked if she goes, I don't want to offend Yahweh. I don't think I did right here, you know, making my position public. Well, you know, I talked to her 100 times. I never knew her position was like this.
Wow.
You know. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I just had to point out the strength it took for her to say fuck you to these church bastards.
Yeah. And the consequence of that, the cost to her to say that to them. And the phonies. The self-righteous. Yeah.
Pigs.
Yeah, you know, and
how could you eat in front of a woman with a child that doesn't have food to eat? What kind of an asshole does that? Excuse me.
Kind of an animal. French. Right. Kind of an animal. Yeah, there's a reason that God sees religious people as if their faces are covered with dung.
Because they are.
They are. You know, Kirk, I don't get angry with misinformation related to Paul very often, but today I got angry. You know, when you're reading Galatians 2:9, and you realize that there are four absolute proofs in Galatians 2:9 that anybody with their wits about them that takes a few minutes just to think about it would realize that Paul absolutely was a fraud and that what he's saying is absolutely untrue. And to think of all of those religious bastards, the pastors and priests that pretended to be righteous, that put on their fancy robes and their slick oratory, begging people for contributions, saying that they were being drawn into God's house, that they were speaking on behalf of God, that they were reading God's word, and proclaiming the testimony of this snake.
Mm-hmm.
Pisses me off. It's so obvious that Paul is a scumbag, that he is a lying son of a bitch, that it pisses you off when you've got this religion having lured so many people to their spiritual death. It does. And, you know, I think it all ties in. They're living the lie. They've swallowed the lie.
You know, I think after a while when you keep studying and you just feel dirty, just keep reading this stuff. I mean, I remember you saying
that a long time ago. $1,500 roughly that we got to her.
Okay.
Right. There's more money than she's ever had in her life. Wow.
Yeah.
She's moving to another town with that. And she's where she has at least a 50% chance of a job opportunity. And I talked to her last time.
Yeah.
I said, how was the food? I hope you went and got a bunch of food. And she was all kinds of happy that she had rice and meat and a sauce on it. And they were living like kings. Can you believe that?
Yeah. Oh. And, you know, Yeah, and you know, the amazing thing about being part of the covenant, I was talking with Scott today about this, because he had a major transformation with a friendship relationship that was based upon a stand that he took. And I said, yeah, it's just...
That's going to happen.
We all go through tough times, because if you don't go through tough times, you don't struggle. Then you have no character, you have no backbone. So God doesn't say, you know, that life is going to be a bowl of cherries. You know, you are going to struggle. You're going to have tough times. And if you don't have tough times, you don't struggle, then you're worthless because you don't have any character. But it just seems to happen that that those who are part of the covenant, things work out.
Yeah.
Things work
out.
Well,
they do. She's got more money than she's ever had in her life. She used to work for an attorney, and the woman attorney, which is why she got in the situation she's in, told her how to wear her hair, how to dress, how to talk,
yeah.
Followed her around, threatened to steal her kids from her if she didn't work. I mean, this is a hell of a way to live, okay?
Right.
And for the first time, she's got a chance, so we're going to get her over there, and, you know, we're going to keep her there one way or another. So,
wow. Scott's situation today was that one of his very closest friends asked him to be in his wedding. And the wedding was scheduled to be in a Roman Catholic church. And Scott said, I'll go buy the and rent the suit, the tux. I'll be there for you at your at all of the events leading up to your wedding. I'll be there for you at your reception. But I can't stand up beside you in a Roman Catholic church. I just can't do it. I used to be an agnostic and was just uninterested in religion, and now I hate religion. And I would be a hypocrite and a fraud to stand up next to you in a Roman Catholic church. So count me as your friend, and I'll support you in every way I can. I just can't do that. I won't do
right.
that. And then, this fellow called Scott yesterday, because the wedding is this week, and he says, I forgot to tell you something. I know that you went ahead and got the tux, and you've been a great friend. So I really do want you to stand up for me. And Scott says, I can't do that in the church. And he says, I changed. We're going to have the wedding on an old farm. And Scott says, then I'll be right there.
Wow.
You know,
that's
the kind of stuff
that happens.
That's a terrific story. Yeah, two terrific stories.
Yeah.
I just feel like sometimes people don't realize, you know, what it takes to stand up. I mean,
I'm not sure we know many people that call in and talk to us and communicate with that haven't lost family members, haven't been called an absolute idiot. Well, people walk away from you. As I say, the first thing is you feel a little lonely, and then after that you get over it. But it's still, it's painful to watch everybody just think you've gone nuts.
We've done several shows on the initial concept, the initial consequence of rejecting religion and politics and coming to embrace Yahweh. And the initial concept, consequence, is isolating and lonely. The isolation and the loneliness, though, lasts a very short period of time. And pretty soon you find that beyond the covenant fellowship, which is a lot better than the fellowship that you left behind, more interesting, more reliable, more enlightened, but you find that with Yahweh, if you're studying his word, you're never alone.
No,
I haven't felt a sense of loneliness. You know, if I'm studying, going and participating in PSOC, and I'm doing my lamb and my making my bitter herbs and olive oil, and I've got my matzah and I'm grilling it, and I'm the only one at the table. I'm not alone. I'm still having a great time.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
I'm not only communicating and in the fellowship of Yahweh, in the set apart spirit, but I'm thinking of the covenant family. That's not alone. But Yahweh doesn't want it to be free. He doesn't want it to be easy. He wants you He wants it to be a commitment. It's just like, he could have picked something that was a lot easier to do than circumcision as the sign of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any attempt to make it easy. He could have shortened his Torah teaching and say, you know, I'm just going to cut to the chase. These are the five things you need to accept if you want to be part of the covenant family. And here are the seven invitations to meet. This is what they represent. This is how you you do it. We'll talk to you on the other side.
Well, and this is well, it's not just not a style. It's, you know, he wants people to actually work it.
No.
Well, he wants people to work at a relationship.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, what if you walked up to your wife, I mean, as an example, and you said, will you marry me? And she said, yes. And then you got married, and you just sat in a room all day.
Right.
You didn't even talk to each other. I mean, that's a hell of a relationship, right?
Or, you know, if and you did, what if you got married and you made the money, she simply spent the money, but she spent the money only on things for her.
Well, that'd
and,
be lovely,
you,
too.
You have a kid. She delivers the kid and says, yeah, you wanted the damn kid. You take care of the kid. You wanted this damn house. You bought the house. You take care of the house. You wanted to eat dinner tonight. You make the dinner. You clean up the dishes. How long would it take before you'd say, why am I in this relationship?
Not long.
Not long. No. And, you know, things that you contribute to and that you invest in are much more enjoyable. I was talking with my daughter-in-law, came over for a swim today. You know, she is now 8 months pregnant. And she came over for a swim. We were talking about my son and how excited he is to be a dad. You know, in a month he's going to be a dad. And we just talked about how difficult it would be if she was 8 months pregnant and alone and was facing the prospect of bringing this her daughter into the world alone. But how different it is when you have a husband or a wife who is committed to you, committed to doing this with you, and it's not just the increased joy of the shared experiences, it's knowing that with a child and a family, the more you contribute to it, the more you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The more you do it together, the more fun it is. Just the way that having children and having a family enrich us through what we contribute, the same thing is true with Yahweh and the covenant family. This is a extraordinarily important insight. But, it's like in Christianity, there is this sense of guilt on their need to thank Yahweh, they don't know his name, their Jesus, for dying for their sins. You know, it's just, oh my God, this you've done this wonderful sacrifice for me. I'm so grateful. I just want to tell you how grateful and appreciative I am. And you know, I almost never say that. And you might say, well, you know, you're not grateful. Well, yeah, I'm appreciative, but do you think that Yahweh did it so that it was a sacrifice? You didn't get anything out of it?
No, you got a family out of it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've made a lot of sacrifices for my children. Do I want my children to say thank you for that sacrifice? No. Because I got more out of it than I invested in it. Yes.
Do
you think that Yahweh got less out of a Pesach and matzah than he got out of Bukkudim and Shavuah? I'm telling you that Yahweh, while it was a marvelous sacrifice, while I'm appreciative, while it makes all the difference in our lives, the fact is, he got a ton out of it. He got more out of it than
He said not even to focus on that. He said to focus on the entirety of his spiritual endeavors, which would be the entire Moed.
Right.
And,
how much fun would it be in a family if every time your family got together, let's say you all made there was some heroic thing that you did that you saved your family from a flood, but boy, it caused you to be crippled, it caused you to be paralyzed, it caused you to endure excruciating pain. And every time the family got together, all they wanted to do was talk about how appreciative they were that you endured all that pain, and they focused on it.
Well, I mean, at some point it would almost become fraudulent. Yeah. Okay, nobody wants to sit around and do that.
Right? It's like the Christian Jesus. He never gets off the damn cross.
No, it's a dead body. That,
right.
Isn't that what he
dead
said?
Dead body hanging out on the cross. I mean, what do you think, folks?
What he says not to consume.
Why are you focused on that instead of focus on the relationship?
Right, he calls it that dead, disgusting body. He calls it a dead, disgusting body, you know. I mean, I mean, that's what he says. It's right there in Dabarim. You know, I had one of these guys from this group say, so Yahushua died for your sins. I said, all you've done is transposed Christianity in here. You're trying to drag the name into a religious belief system. And I said, frankly, I don't care what you believe. And you shouldn't care what I believe, but you should care what the words say. But they don't. I mean, they're so busy trying to
push. God cannot die.
Yeah, check that one
out. God can't be born. God cannot die. The two dates that are the most important in Christianity, their birth of their God and the death of their God, are based entirely on nonsensical concepts. No. Death is not a resolution for sin. And God did not die. Understand the role that the Passover lamb plays, and the body of the Passover lamb is slain to nourish us, to benefit us. And so as part of the celebration of Pesach, Yosha's physical body served as the Passover lamb. But how relevant, how significant was the physical body compared to the totality of Yahweh?
Yep. That's so infinitesimal.
Infinitesimal. And when we talk about life and death, what is it, what part of your nature is the part of your nature that determines whether you are alive or dead?
Your soul.
Your soul. Did Yosha's soul die?
No.
No. Didn't, did it? Yosha's soul went to where?
He found the light.
Sheol, and then he was released from Sheol. The soul was released to Sheol and reunited with Yahweh's set apart spirit. So the soul never died.
No.
So how can somebody be dead if their soul is alive?
No, he just discarded the old body.
Right. And why, if they think that God died, why was the last words, my God, why have you separated yourself from me?
Mm-hmm.
How can God have died if the last words are, my God, why have you separated yourself from me?
So when you tell that to somebody,
come
what do they
on,
say?
Christian, just because you learned that the name isn't Jesus, think through the rest of it.
What is the Christian argument when you present that?
They immediately recognize you cannot argue with that. And since
you can't
argue with it, they either want to change the subject, or they want to discredit you, or they typically just go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what is the Larry, you're engaging with these people all the time. What is the argument to God can't die? Why did he say, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now, you and I know that he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Not because he was trying to tell you that he wasn't dying. But it does tell you that. Yeah, he was quoting the 22nd Psalm because he said, maybe you want to read what I said about this moment 1,000 years ago so you might understand it. I mean, that's why he was quoting that.
Yeah, exactly. they don't have an answer to anything. Basically, they don't listen to Yahweh's words. They don't know Yahweh's words, and what they know of them, they don't much like. So,
because the founder of their religion said that the Old Testament was pornography. He said that the Torah Yahweh's teaching cannot save. He said that it was a cruel taskmaster. He said that the Torah can be equated to a dead husband. So, of course, they don't like it. They think that's the mean God of the Jews, and they hate the Jews. I'm glad, by the way, that Yahweh was considered spiteful and wrathful and mean and hateful. I've gone to this point where I've begun to communicate regularly. The problem isn't that we hate too much. The problem isn't hate speech. The problem is we don't hate enough. And that's the difference between us and Yahweh, is Yahweh knows what to hate. And it is incredibly disparaging of those things which are harmful. And that is our problem. We don't hate that which is harmful, and therefore it becomes pervasive.
Who was that took that quoted you on their show, or where, was it a show, radio show?
Oh, what happened on the because I've done now three programs on our problem isn't that we isn't hate speech as we're told. Our problem is that we don't hate enough. And Jerry McLaughlin, who does listen to this show and listens also to Shattering Myths, who was the person that originally represented me when I wrote Tea with Terrorism and Prophet of Doom. He's a publicist. Jerry Jerry doesn't have a lot of money. Jerry took that show, the words of the show, had a professional voice then present them, and he posted it on one of the top internet sites in the world. And it's a subject they would normally not touch because it was promoting hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was lovely. I saw that write up and listened to it, by the way.
Yeah. Our problem isn't that we hate too much; it's that we don't hate enough. And that's
once you go outside the sphere of political correctness and you start seeing reality. You know, that matrix is designed, obviously, as you know, it was designed that way. It was to eliminate thought. It was to limit conversations. I mean, that's what was going on there. And I see that now, people are almost, they're into sterile conversations that mean nothing. Nobody calls anybody out on anything.
That's true.
And that is what's wrong. That's what's wrong.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. We're not exercising good judgment. It's today when I had IQ Al-Rasuli, I was talking about the four things that Yahweh gave us that lead to the ultimate gift. And we're not using those things. What we talked about is that, I've always thought that Yahweh gave us three things, and I just didn't think it all the way through. Yahweh gave us four things that lead to the fifth. And so, what are the five things that Yahweh gave us, or the four things that lead us to the fifth? Because, the covenant has one prerequisite and four requirements, just like a fingers and a thumb and a hand. And the covenant has five benefits, of which one is the prerequisite for the rest of them. And so, I was thinking about this and what Yahweh gave us, and I think it's germane to this particular conversation because he gave us mortal life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, life is a wonderful gift, and he wrote the language of life, which is DNA, and created the environment where life, as he created, could exist. He gave us life. What a wonderful gift! The second thing he gave us was a nefesh, a soul, and all animals have souls. But what the soul does is that, and this is something that is really essential. I know I've said this a thousand times. I don't know if it's ever resonated with me. What I'm going to say next gives me goosebumps because it so ties in with what Yahweh is encouraging for us. A soul enables animals to observe their surroundings and respond. It's the difference between a plant and an animal. An animal, and humans are animals, have a soul, which is consciousness, that enables us to examine our environment and respond.
Mm-hmm.
So this ability to observe and respond is one of the gifts that Yahweh gave us in terms of a soul. It's extraordinarily important. And then, and that's this gift of life, but it's not just life. It's life with the ability to be observant and to respond. Now, then the next thing is that he gave us this on the Soma, which is the ability to evaluate that which we're observing and to be discriminating so that we can exercise good judgment via our conscience and understand that which is good, bad, truthful, right, wrong, and know what we should accept and what we should reject, what we should align ourselves with and what we should oppose. And so, you know, this is the principal thing that enables us to be right. It's the tool that enables being right, which is the nesama, our conscience, the seat of judgment, the ability to exercise good judgment. It's the thing that political correctness is the most opposed to.
In the stories, yeah.
Yeah. Then the third thing that Yahweh offers us is free will. But any one of these things without the other two is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
Because free will without the ability to exercise good judgment is no different than being a jellyfish being pushed by the tide.
Yeah, you can't do both. You have to have free will.
Right. And so for Yahweh's plan, which is for us to observe what he has to say during our mortal existence and exercise good judgment regarding it, so that we, of our own volition, choose to be part of the covenant. All of that is required, and those are three gifts. But there is a fourth gift, and it may be the most important gift of all.
Relationship?
No, the Torah.
Oh, the Torah, yeah. Okay. That's where you relate to him.
He gave every one of us those four gifts. Every human being has those four gifts. You got life. You have a conscience. So you have consciousness. You have a conscience. You have the free will. And the Torah is the best known, most published book in the history of mankind. Is what we focus on here.
You know, that's really beautiful. I never considered this. I never really considered it. I mean, I guess you have to as a person.
Torah is as essential, Larry. The Torah is as essential as these other three. If you don't have all four, none of the three have any lasting value. But he gave all of them.
Right. That's why most people are walking dead. The Torah. When you say Torah to people, and you know, I have to say, HaSeitan has done a wonderful job.
Yeah,
I mean that.
Yeah, particularly through Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Between Paul and Peter,
they
really messed that one up big time. Well, they did a nice job of screwing up Torah, turning from teaching and guidance to law. But you know, but Larry, what good is the ability to observe where you are on the map if you don't have the map?
I'm with you here.
Conscience and the ability to discern that which is reliable and that which is misleading if you don't have something to examine that is important. It's what good is having free will if you don't have any way of knowing what the choice is?
Mm-hmm.
Without the Torah, free will is meaningless. Without the Torah, the ability to be observant and respond is meaningless. Because you don't know what to respond to. Without the Torah...
Let me tell you something, pal. Without the Torah, you better have some commands.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
so those are the four. So what do they lead to? The four lead to the... And not everyone is given this one. This is why the fifth is not given to everyone, but it's available to everyone, but only if they use the first four. What's the ultimate gift?
The covenant.
Life.
Right.
Yeah.
Life. The family, and I'm becoming more and more uncomfortable using the word covenant because it has a religious connotation where the word beres means family relationship. So the family relationship is the single most valuable gift in the universe. So Yahweh gave us those four things, and if we exercise our consciousness, our ability to observe and respond. If we exercise our nesama, our ability to exercise good judgment to discern what is trustworthy and useful and good and right, if we exercise our choice of free will once we have done those things based upon an examination of the Torah guidance, then we are in position to accept and benefit from the greatest gift that there is in this universe, the Beirut, the family relationship.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the covenant because it's like a family, it's like a marriage contract to me when I say the word. I don't think religious terms. I think, okay, this is what we're agreeing to love one another forever, that sort of thing.
Yes,
so,
exactly. It's a marriage vow. It is a family relationship.
Yeah.
And it's a unique family in the sense that while there is a father and mother and there are children, as there would be, and there is a home, and there are rules, things that are expected of those who are participate in the home, and there is an inheritance that goes along with it. I mean, there's all the trappings of family here. This family is unique in the sense of the father's primary intent and the spiritual mother's primary intent is to elevate us so that we are as similar to, as capable as the father. He wants us to be as rich, as powerful, as capable, as enlightened as he is.
That just blows me away.
Yeah. But here again, this is not sacrificial giving. The more he gives, the more he gets.
Mm-hmm. He grows too.
You know? Yeah, he grows.
Yeah, yeah. See, this is a concept. This is a concept nobody else would say. I've never heard it before.
No.
You're correct here. I mean, Yahweh's not living in a vacuum. I mean, really, he's doing what he's doing for a reason.
Right.
And he enjoys the company. He does.
He gets something out of it. He grows. And for us to shortchange him, you know, he tells us what he gets out of it. He grows. And if God doesn't grow, he's like everything that doesn't grow. Life that doesn't grow dies. And so eternity, if you're not growing, would be miserable. And so there's only one way that God, Yahweh, can grow. There's only one way that eternity for him is enjoyable. And that's to be able to share it with his family. That's to be able to give everything he has to his children. That's how he grows. That's how eternity for him becomes marvelous. Now, the fact that God gets something out of this, and a lot out of it, should not bother us. It doesn't demean God. It makes God more real. And it should make us feel more comfortable knowing that, so do we get more out of it than he does? Yeah. But
the fact that he gets
a ton out of it, I mean, from perspective, I mean, God,
yeah, no,
God
yes,
grows.
Of course.
God,
from
God
where we are versus where he is, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly, from my perspective, I'm getting a lot more out of it than I'm contributing to it. But sure, from God's point of view, the contribution is more than worth what he has given. And I think the last thing that he wants is for us to wallow in and focus on and get mired in our appreciation of the sacrifice. Because I think that from his perspective, that was a blink in time, a nanosecond in time, to enable a enjoyable, festive, celebratory, enlightening, empowering, enriching eternity.
Yeah, well, he always talks about growth.
Yeah. You know, when we said something at the beginning of the show. You asked me if Torah and the wa in Torah and the hey in Torah didn't tell us how to pronounce the only two letters in Yahweh's name that there's any question on, because the yod, the yah, everybody knows how to pronounce. No one even disagrees on that. So does the if Torah, which it means guidance and teaching and direction, doesn't teach us, guide us, and direct us how to pronounce Yahweh's name, would I think less of God? And the answer is yes. Now, do I think that God is saying, wait a minute, that is, who are you to say that you would think less of me just because I didn't communicate how to pronounce my name in the book of Torah? I think that rather than Yahweh saying, who are you to make such a statement, to say you'll have less respect of me, I think that makes Yahweh proud.
I think he's saying good
afternoon. I think he's saying, that's the relationship I want. I think when Abraham went to him and said, hey, man, I don't get it, you know. I just don't get it. And oh, by the way, I want to negotiate with you here on Sodom. I think he's saying, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind of eternity. That's the kind of relationship that's going to be fun. Hmm. I don't want a bunch of dependents. I want a bunch of people that are willing to challenge, to poke fun, to laugh.
Yeah,
do you think that God is opposed to sarcasm? Because I don't.
No, I don't think so. Not at all. Because it's all over his writing. Yeah,
right.
No,
I hope not, because I'd be in a lot of trouble.
Hey, Chavacook, go out there and get you some of those pieces of paper and a pen and write those letters.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of in your face, you know, Paul's letters.
Right. Yeah. I said, okay, I understand. It's going to be a long time for now before any of this materializes. As a matter of fact, it's 666 years. But I know it's a long time, but don't you worry, Chavacook. It's going to materialize exactly as you're writing it down. And then Chavacook is looking at this guy and saying, wait a minute. You've got a religion that claims that you died for them. God, hey, come on. You can't die. What's wrong with these people? You know, when you even have Daniel, he's getting these revelations. I mean, he's the part where he bows down to Jerusalem. I mean, it's okay. Now we've got a sense of humor here. When Yahweh says that it's the day that no one knows, and the day that the rabbis replaced Teruah with, they called it the unknown day. It's the day that Satan doesn't know, so that you can fool Satan. And so he says, oh,
yeah, yeah, the day they went to Marduk's temple.
Yeah. He has a sense of humor. I mean, come on. There's a camel and a platypus. There's a kiwi bird. I mean,
he has a
sense of humor.
Well, I think the platypus is cute.
Yeah.
I think they're really the neatest little thing.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yeah.
You know, when I was talking earlier here about Renee standing up, okay, what I wanted to point out there, and I do want to
say, more courage than the rest of us combined, by the way.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, picture yourself, okay? You're at home with your son,
right?
Okay, or daughter, and you know, you got about 3 days left. You have no job.
Yeah. Right.
You have nobody there that can help you. Her friend's over 1,000 kilometers away.
Right.
You got no hope. You got no food. You got no job. You barely got any clothes. And you'd still stand up.
This is where her courage is. I think most of us would be willing to risk our lives to convey the truth. You know, when I wrote Prophet of Doom, I realized I'm going to have tens of thousands of people trying to kill me. I'm willing to risk my life to tell the truth. I got no issue with that at all. She had a kid.
I know. That's
one
what I'm saying.
Was my life. Like when I went to Yahweh and said, you know, I'll do this, but it can't be at the risk of my children's lives. Now, I was not willing to risk my children's life to tell this story. I was willing to risk my own. And that's when the 91st Psalm was said, no, I get it. No, you are not going to be risking your children's lives. Matter of fact, you're not going to be risking your own life. But you're most certain, because I'm going to take care of that. But I'm going to have a host of my messengers. They're going to protect your children. It's not, you're not risking them. So that didn't take any courage. Which he did. The courage.
Mm-hmm. Remember, when he went to that house and the lady was there and they divided up the last meal she had? Was that Yeshua?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Very reminiscent of that, isn't it? And then she ate from that point when she shared it with Yasha. She ate from that point on.
Yes.
I mean, everything turned around on that point. So.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Kirk.
But for many of us, we have to go through a period like that, where it is costly, where there is something that you put at risk, that's near and dear to you, that you're willing to say, "I'm willing to let go of this. I'm willing to divorce myself of the things that society thinks are important." I'll give you a small example, but from my perspective. It was Jim Doyle was the original administrator of the Yada Yada Forum. And Jim believed that while the written word was powerful, that the spoken word adds a dimension to the written word, and that I needed to speak about the insights in Yada Yada. And so he booked the first Blog Talk Radio program and also became Shattering Myths and also this program. And he did it. And I didn't want to do it because I realized that I have a tendency to mispronounce important words. And also because I recognize that if everything you say is prepared, you're not credible. Because if you actually understand what you're talking about, you are much more credible if you engage on an extemporaneous basis, so that you've studied the material. For example, today's show, I was prepared to talk about the insights that are in Shemot 19, where it introduces the Yobel. Mm-hmm. And I have it all translated, but my preparation was only to have the translations available, and then we were going to be extemporaneous as we worked through this material. And I realized that there are so many people that can translate Hebrew better than I can, that can speak better than I can, that know more than I do, and that in an extemporaneous environment like this, I would embarrass myself, and since I'm trying to share Yahweh's testimony, my credibility is only valuable in the sense that if I'm not credible in this pursuit, then I'm not effective in sharing Yahweh's testimony, and I didn't want to do it for those reasons. I realized that I would fail on all of those areas, and that was my concern. I don't want to do it. I'm going to embarrass myself. I'm going to make myself too vulnerable, and I think you have to be willing to take those risks.
Well, I think you're poo-pooing yourself too much. I mean, you may have been then, but you certainly ain't now. Your perspective is terrific. I'm the dummy in the crowd.
No, you know, I want to make this clear because I think it's important. There are lots of people that know more than I do about almost everything that we talk about. The only thing that I have that has value is that studying Yahweh's words in a manner that my brain likes to operate, I made some connections, and the connections led to understanding. And I'm confident that understanding trumps knowledge all of the time. And so when you speak from a perspective of understanding what Yahweh said, then you don't have to be worried. You can, with great confidence, you can go into any discussion if you understand what Yahweh had to say. It's like Islam, for example. This is the opposite. Now we're talking about death and darkness and deceit as opposed to truth and light and life. But with Islam, there's probably 100 million people on the planet that know more about Islam than I do. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that understands Islam better than I do.
Yeah.
And so I can go into any environment and speak about it, even though there's people that know it better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's true of the Torah, the people that know the Torah better than I do. I don't, I'm not sure there's a lot of people that understand it a whole lot better. At least I understand it to the point that I'm comfortable talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, if you're going to stand down, I mean, let's get real here. Put yourself back 15 years. I mean, just if you can.
Ooh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a guy like you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, probably. But a guy, at least in this arena. And a guy like you walks up and says, you know, I'll tell you something right now. There's no prayer that Yah was interested in. He doesn't care about faith or belief. And furthermore, he's not interested in praise. He can't stand anybody bowing
right.
to him.
Doesn't want to be worshipped. That would be demean him. And oh, by the way, his name is Yah, and he wrote it 7,000 times. And this is how we can learn how to pronounce it.
Yeah, somebody right
off
the cuff said that to you.
Yeah, he doesn't have a religion, but he does have a relationship, and that relationship is based upon the word for family and home. If somebody came to me and said, these are some insights that are presented in a book called Guidance. If somebody said that to me, I would be all ears, all eyes, and I would be all over that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you would. You would.
I would.
Maybe I would. Craig would.
Yeah.
Probably all of us listening would.
Oh, yeah.
But the average person will run to an academic, one of these people that you're talking about that supposedly...
Yeah, right.
You know,
why would you go and ask a religious person to critique
contradict
what
their religion?
Said? Why wouldn't you care enough about your soul to figure out if it's true?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it?
Right.
It is a fact.
Yeah, I will do the same thing I think you all do. When somebody sends me something that they said, you know, I want you to evaluate this or think about this, I will always, the first thing I'll do is try to affirm the credibility of the source. Is the source reporting the evidence accurately? Is the evidence that we're considering here, does it have merit? And so I'll spend some time on doing that. Now, if it's from Yahweh, if somebody has a perspective on Yahweh, it's okay, what are you basing it on? What testimony from Yahweh are you basing it on? And if they can't base it on something that Yahweh said in context, then I'm just not interested. But I'm really interested, like when Roy comes up with some insights from science that help us better understand the seven-dimensional construct that Yahweh has created and what it means to be immortal and empowered and enriched by Him, and what we gain by increasing dimensions, I find that totally
fascinating.
Even if I understand 5% of it. I'm enriched by that.
I think I'm on the fifth read through his last email, or not email, but his paper he wrote on that.
Yes.
About 5 minutes through it, and I still don't think I've got a quarter of what he's conveying.
Yeah.
I started watching all the science shows over lately because just to try to keep up, getting something on the belt, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, was talking three nights ago. I had dinner with my son, and we spent most of our dinner talking about relativity and about the relationship between energy and matter and how it relates to what Yahweh is offering, what he wants to do on our behalf.
And aren't these things enjoyable? And they're interesting.
Yeah.
And how many people want to talk about them?
Yeah,
next to none.
Yeah, but it adds to our understanding. Anything that adds to our understanding, to me, is worth doing. Because when you transition from ignorance to knowing, and then from being irrational to understand, at that point, everything in life is this journey of exploration. Everything, you go from hoping and faith to knowing, to being absolutely convinced. It's why... You know, I so love the testimony and the Psalms and the lyrics of Dodd. Dodd came to the same conclusions and the same conviction exactly the same way. Dodd never met with the Yahweh in person. He came to know Yahweh and understand what he is offering by reading the Torah, by studying the Torah. Same way we did. Exactly the same way. And you know, we were talking today, who knows Yahweh better? You know, if you were to take all the characters, you know, Abraham met with him in person, right? Adam met with him in person. Moshe met with him in person. Even Shamuel met with him in person. Yahochanan, Shimon Kefesh, Jacob met with him in person. If you were to choose one person who you would say, this guy really understands the mindset, the character, and the offering of Yahweh, who would it be? I've just given you, I've given you 10 names. Who?
Well, Dode is first. I mean, Moshe is a close second because he did write
the book. But Dode is first, right?
But Dode would have to be first.
Did Dode have any means of getting to know Yahweh other than the Torah and the influence of the set apart spirit as he was studying?
No, he didn't. No. And that's what gives us hope. I mean, really.
Absolutely.
Well, it also says you don't have to go a lot of different places.
Right.
He was able to blow through the religion, though, and look at what was happening.
Correct.
I mean, and we've gotten to a point, hopefully, here, that's what we're doing. You know,
exactly the same way. And that's why I said, you know, the children of Israel that were on as part of the Exodus. And people say, you know, if I was there, boy, then I'd really believe. Because, you know, they saw God performing these miracles.
No, you wouldn't.
Read the Torah. You want to see God performing miracles? Read the Torah. You want to see him right before your eyes? Read the Torah. You want to get to know him? Read the Torah. You want absolute proof he exists? Read the Torah. You want to know
more disposal than they had?
Right.
There's so many confirmations
closer than any of
beyond
them.
Belief.
Remember
a couple of weeks back, we were doing a 22nd Psalm, I think. And we were doing the 22nd Psalm, and we're down into, you know, the scientific description of what kills a person during the crucifixion, which hadn't even been invented yet from the Roman style crucifixion, which was what was depicted here.
Yeah.
And
800 years,
you know, you look at
the Roman crucifixion. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, or speaking of, you know, the 15 billion or 14.7 billion years equaling 6 days, or the dimensions of the ark, which are.
Or how about the only eyewitness account of what happened on Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, and Shavua? The only eyewitness account of what happened was written 1,000 years before it occurred on our normal passage of time.
Hmm.
That's a bit telling.
I mean, okay.
Yeah, so that's by sitting there saying you didn't see him. Well, he's talking to you. You're hearing it.
Right.
You're not listening in these times.
Right.
And it is a giant puzzle we're all putting together, which we will never complete. You know, until it's written inside of us, because there's many aspects.
It's still growing. Do you think that he's going to limit? First of all, what he's writing inside of us is not the Torah as it exists.
No.
Most of what's in the Torah as it exists would have very little value to us in eternity. We don't need to be introduced to Yahweh in eternity. We'll know him.
We don't need a path to God's home in eternity.
We're already home. We don't need to know what the terms and conditions are of the covenant. We've already embraced them. We don't need to know what the consequence is of rejecting Yahweh, because we've already accepted it. Most of what's in the Torah won't do us any good in eternity.
Well, you're saying most of what's in the Torah now, but it's still Torah. Because that's why Torah doesn't mean law, or Torah doesn't have those limits.
Because there won't be any laws in eternity, but we have to, you know, we're going to be unbelievably powerful and influential. And so we really ought to have some really good guidance, so that it's just like exercising free will without proper guidance. It's worthless. So do you want to exercise free will in eternity without proper guidance?
With all that power, no.
No, I don't. Might screw something up. I don't. I want the guidance. I want the understanding. I want the teaching. I want the direction. But what he's going, the Torah that he's putting into us going forward is not capital T. It's not the books that he dictated to Moshe. It's the guidance that we're going to need to capitalize on the gift of the Bereth family relationship. That's what he's going to give us. It's the guidance to enrichment, the guidance to enlightenment, the guidance to growth, the guidance of how to have fun together. Now, I think there's an enormous amount of the Torah that is still going to be part of that Torah he puts inside of us. For example, I think the pattern of eternity is still going to be 6 plus 1 equals 7. I think we are going to go out and explore over 6 days, and I think on the seventh day, even though time will flow differently when we're in different places, there'll still be a universal time clock, and on the seventh day, we're all going to come back together, no matter where we were, and share what we did, what we explored, what we learned, what we saw.
I'm pretty sure we'll go over it with that one.
Yeah, I think we're still going to meet seven times a year. Yeah, I think we're going to meet seven times a year. I think that Pesach and Matzah and Bukkurim, the benefits of those things and those parties are going to be celebrated for all eternity.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to use the name Yahweh for all time. I think we're going to speak in Hebrew. And I think understanding what these words mean in Hebrew and the tenses and the stems and the conjugations, I think that's going to have value to it. I think there's going to be the rhythms and the perspective and the overall scope and purpose of the Torah is going to be with us forever, even though the guidance is going to be guidance that right now, if he were to give us, would do us no good. Because right now, I really don't know how, I don't need to know how to maneuver in time. You know?
Earlier, that which doesn't grow dies. In eternity, we're going to have to grow.
Right.
It would be boring if we didn't. I would not be looking forward to eternity if that was not.
But by the way, this is one of the things that I think actually does not limit Yahweh, but makes him greater, which is that I think there is enormous things that are happening in the existing universe and that will happen in the new universe that he is unaware of. And that he will go with us and examine and explore and witness these things for the first time with us.
Also, mm-hmm. I think so.
I'm convinced of it. I think there's an enormous amount that of the universe out there right now that God has not even witnessed. And because what would be the purpose if you can't share it?
Mm-hmm.
So,
if you did a review of this program tonight and all the topics and how wonderful they are and what we've explored, even cursory, and then you compare that to this counterfeit garbage we were talking about
right.
Paul.
Yeah,
which is all really just a counterfeit from a Moloch who has no creativity, has no nothing,
right.
Has to. In fact, this morning I was going to say to you, you know, that the reason Paul has to answer my own question, the reason Paul has to have Shimon give him the right hand or lie about all that stuff, is because he has no credibility, because he has nothing to offer but a twisted counterfeit thing, so you got to have a stamp of approval from somebody. How, if you were looking at both of them now in this kind of light, why would anyone buy this counterfeit, and why do so many buy it? I mean, I know it's a rhetorical question. It's you have to have an open mind, and you have to not be brainwashed by families and traditions and all that. I mean, I understand all that. I just sit back sometimes and just go, wow, I mean, the choices are so...
Religion is an emotional experience, Kurt.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Brainwashing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's emotional.
Why would you...
look at what we were talking about and how much fun, how much joy it would be there, and just what the alternative is, just give me a break. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, why would you want the counterfeit, knowing for certain that nothing the counterfeit was promising was going to materialize, when you could have the promise from the Creator God of the universe of an enriching and enlightening family relationship for all time?
You literally give up nothing and gain everything.
Exactly. Yeah, each of the five conditions to participate in the covenant, why they require effort, they require making a sacrifice. The benefits of each of the conditions is so much greater than the cost. Yeah, you give up something when you walk away from religion and politics, but what you gain is an ability to see the truth and to embrace the truth and to accept the truth and to know the truth. So you gain infinitely more than you give up.
So you're giving up a lie to gain the truth. Boy, there's a hell of a sacrifice.
The conditions of the covenants are all benefits.
You know what? Exactly. But at the same time, I mean, there's so few people that are interested because Satan has done a grand job. He's done a grand job. When you try to talk to somebody about Yahweh, if you decide to engage anybody about Yahweh, I can engage them on about 15, 20, 100 topics, and they'll immediately jump right in and get into it. Engage them with Yahweh and watch eyes roll. I mean, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That is the truth. You know, that's why I like the way I do it, with just throwing note after, even if they're redundant, make five new notes and throw them out. Just keep throwing them out until somebody reads them. They end up on somebody's page that's never seen them. Then somebody gets in touch with you, and then we're off to the races. We brought two more people in this week. I mean, that way. And so, you know, when I look at, you know, I like it because what they're doing is they're self-engaging. You know, I don't have to do anything, really.
Right. If Yahweh's testimony appeals to you, you will engage. Kirk, you were your prime example. Your wife heard insight that properly presents Yahweh's perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
You heard it and said, oh, boy, that is exactly what I expected.
It is. It clarified so many things right off the bat, and also it made me angry for having missed them, you know, for being so wrong on so many of them. But she heard it and printed it and was reading it and already read it, and then I got home and she said, hey, look at this. And we were off to the races ever since. And that didn't even take a breath.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Let's just go. I think it was the same for all of us, that when what we thought to be true turned out to be inconsistent with what Yahweh said, I don't think there was a moment in time where any of us were resentful or that we're saying, all right, well, I'm sorry, God, I can't go with you there because it contradicts what I believe.
No. And nothing even frightened me about it. I mean, and people get scared to talk to them, and I go, well,
total relief.
Afraid of?
Yeah, total relief.
Why would anyone care that they had to lose some traditions once they found out all those traditions were a lie anyway?
Right.
I mean, that's one of the first things you realize, isn't it?
You know, I ate dinner tonight, and after I ate dinner, I put the part that I did not eat in the trash. I was not the least bit reluctant to carry out the trash.
No.
When I study Yahweh's word, I'm nourished by it. I enjoy it, and those things that I had to discard that were proven false by it, I put in the trash can. I carry out the trash. You know, it's stinky, it's smelly, it's yucky. I don't have any use for it.
Terry went out and busted up all the Christmas ornaments. I mean, I was amazed.
Yeah. Good for her.
I'll sell them because then I'll just somebody else to help somebody else do the wrong thing.
And
so you just all that cracking these things up.
I would say there's only one part. Maybe there are two parts of Christmas that I miss a little bit. I am
food family.
No, the melody and the lyrics of some of the songs, at least in some portions of some of the songs. Some of the lyrics and the melodies are pretty. Some of those songs, because of the nature of the lyrics and the melody, that I like. Although I have to tell you, when I hear all of the lyrics of 99% of the songs, I want to vomit. Is how untrue they are. And the second thing is,
I love Christmas music. Now I can't stand it.
Yeah,
the what?
I mean, if you play the music without the lyrics. The music is pretty good music. It's just that the lyrics are so raw.
I can't do that because I know the lyrics and I start.
And the second thing is,
I used to like Mannheim Steamroller. I used to play that.
Me too.
Siberian Orchestra.
me too. And there's some of the songs that really do have good melody. I kind of miss that, and I like the idea of having a time where family got off of work and everybody as a family could come together, because the society made a time where we could all come together as family.
So wonderful. He's not stupid. He's just disingenuous. And you're out there. I mean, think about the perfection of this, though. I mean, you're literally out there teaching your kids how to kill themselves.
That's right. You are.
Wow.
Yeah,
religion
is not a victimless crime.
No.
If religion was like taking heroin, I really don't care. You want to ingest religion and kill yourself? That's fine. But when you make the contribution to the church, when you speak on behalf of the church, when you take your children to the church, when you invite your friends to the church, then that's the problem. You're killing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to being not a victimless crime anymore.
Yeah, but it's not even just the church. Let's say you figured out, okay, organized religion is bad. You know, that's the point I started at. I'm sure that's a point that a lot of people start at. They realize organized religion is the problem. What you don't realize is that at that moment is that every facet of it's backwards.
Uh-huh. Right.
I mean, that's huge. That's huge. Especially when you can look right at it and see it. And it's actually in your face, you know. You know, you're bowing to him. Why? Why would he even require such nonsense? Nobody likes that, somebody bowing to him. Well, I guess a madman does. A psychopath would enjoy that. But, you know, I wouldn't. If every time I walked in a room, people bowed to me and called me Mr. Hendricks and all this nonsense, I would just, I don't know what I'd do, but I'd get out of there. I'd get out of there.
I didn't have much time from the time that the people that were working in my home here left, and my daughter-in-law left, to the time the show started. And I didn't have time to go out to dinner, but I live in a community that is part of a country club, and they'll, you can order from the menu, and they will drive your meal over to golf cart. And the person that came kept on referring to me as Mr. Wynn. And you just say, oh, my God. I hate being called Mr. Wynn.
You know, when people call me Mr. Hendricks, you know what I say to them? I said, that's right, that's Mr. to you. Yeah, and then they lie. I'm really like, no, don't do that.
When I was doing teaching, it was real odd having students refer to me as Mr. Bowen. I felt uncomfortable. Like, no.
I really do. I really don't want a title. I don't want somebody to speak to me as if somehow you're calling somebody Mister. It's almost like we have a different level or something. And I just, God, I hate it.
Yeah, the whole stratified society thing is weird. We had a...
Well, that's the same thing with Yahweh. You know, I'll call him Dad, I'll call him Yah. But this idea of giving, affording a title to him that elevates him, I think would probably make him as uncomfortable with his children as does you being called Mr. Hendricks or Mr. Bowen.
Well, you have to understand that Southerners still have to say yes, sir, and no, sir, because they're part. We're so ingrained.
Yeah, I know. Yes,
lighten up,
so you have to live with that with me.
Yeah, I know.
I had an eye exam this week, and I started talking to the guy about suddenly this absolute attack on television and in the news media of the acceptance of transgendered persons.
I mean, the flavor of the month, I guess.
It's an absolute onslaught, is what it is. We're going to shove this down your throat, whether you like it or not.
We're going to shove it down your throat. Where a commentator says, you know, to give Caitlyn Jenner, a award for heroism and courage for having a commercial. Transgender. I mean, he still has a ding-a-ling. He just has breasts.
I wasn't sure, nor did he.
Yeah. He's partial. He's halfway. And they give him a hero award. And one sports guy said, that does not make him heroic. And they had a caller, you know, come in and say, you know, you're a bigot. You're ignorant. I'll never listen to your show again. You know, and you just go on and on with these people on their self-righteousness about you either accept our view of sexual perspective and political correctness, or you're a scumbag, and they're hateful and vicious, and you just, God.
No, I turn on, and now listen, I watch the Animal Planet, and I turn on an animal show. Mm-hmm. And what they're going through in this animal show, this was yesterday, is you know, all the homosexuality in the animal kingdom. And they got a queer sitting there commentating the thing. And they talk about the seahorse, how the daddy gives birth out of his chest, spits him out or whatever. And he says, and he's the drag queen of the animal world. And then I turn channels, and what did I get? Greg Louganis talking about, and they had him as, he was the Messiah, he was the savior of the world that came out, and to listen to this pathetic guy talk about himself and his problems, and I went, you know, it's, you just can't escape it, okay? I mean, it is, this is an onslaught, and that very week, the Pope said we need to start looking at homosexuality a little different, and then this other deal where the Department of Defense, the head of the Department of Defense, went in. You know, you got economies falling to pieces, you got wars everywhere, and the main problem is dealing with transgendered persons. That this is the real problem that has to be handled right now. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I can.
You want to deal with a tiny fraction of 1% of people that.
I don't really think transgender
are very, very uncommon. They're not only extraordinarily rare, they're having a very difficult time with who they are.
Right. And somehow, you know, we're going to work our way through this, and we're going to learn to accept it.
Why would you accept something that is odd?
So anyway, but I asked my eye doctor.
I tell you what, if you were a transgender person and somebody of the opposite sex that you have chosen wants to have a relationship with you, could you conceive children?
No.
No. So could you be productive in that sense? Could you conceive children and raise a family?
No, of course not.
No.
But, you know, when I told the guy the story in this one room, and I was asking him, I said, what do you think this is all about? And he says, here, I want to show you something else. I'm going to do an extra picture here for you. He gets me in the office. He starts talking, you know. He goes, you know, I'm like a redneck from Mississippi. I said, no, I didn't know that, but go ahead. You know, and he just, finally somebody he can actually talk to about this. Then when we walked out, he plays like he's talking to me about a chart. I mean, he couldn't even be himself in his own office. It was astounding. Wow. It was astounding. You know, I think he was glad I came in. You know, we had somebody could at least share with, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but it was kind of a, you know, it's getting to a point here where, you know, reality doesn't even count. Matter of fact, I think if you want to know the truth, and you said a long time ago, you said, I hold out no hope for this country, in fact, for this world.
Right.
I do hold out some hope for a few individuals. I remember you
correct.
Telling me that.
Yeah, I
and,
do. Exactly right.
And that is absolutely where we at. We have really reached the surreal.
We have.
I mean, really, we have.
Yeah, we
it's
have. And when you interact with most people, you come to realize that it's not just that they are reluctant to think. I'm not sure they're capable of thinking.
Yeah, that's strange to hear. I'm kind of concluding about the same thing. I would not have 20 years ago, but I'm absolutely this generation they can't put it together.
I mean, you watch somebody drive a car and try to parallel park. They're just not capable of processing what is required to contemplate and finish the tax. You hear somebody talk about their political affiliation, and you just go, oh, my God, everything you're saying is the opposite of what's true.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody, I was sitting down at dinner, and somebody decided they wanted to pray, and they bowed their head, and they prayed before the meal. And you say, why would you do that?
What a monkey. Yeah.
You're
just acting like a monkey at that point.
JB,
is that where you're coming from now? I mean, we've reached the surreal. I mean, it's caricature after caricature. They are caricatures now.
Do you think the media is doing a lot of this stuff just because it's a distraction? People like the sideshow.
I think the man of lawlessness. I think the man of
permeates everything.
I do believe that. I believe it's a sign of the times. I mean, it's right. You know, the man in opposition to the Torah has no love for women. I mean, you know, let me tell you, if you got sexual urges for women, you have some love for women, and
yes.
The man has no love for women. And,
yeah, well, I think that the sexual urges for women are often not love. For example, the Islamic concept of the virgins of paradise, you know.
Well, you're not going to get me. But yeah, that's true. But at some point, if you really have those feelings, you're going to have some. You're going to have some kind of an involvement too at some point. But I think it's just straight homosexuality, and I think, you know, at some point they're going to say, you know, we're better than you. Homosexuals are better than you. Say it. You know,
yes,
and
yes.
The Nazis will go out and, you know, like little idiots and say, yes, homosexuals are better than me. Okay, go home. You know, I think it's going that far. I think that's how far it's going to go. And
it won't go very much further because it won't go on much longer.
Well, no, we all know. You know, this next decade's going to fly by pretty fast, you know.
I know. I hope we all get to stay all the way through and just keep talking.
Yeah. Yep. You know. Somebody has put in the chat room. I guess that irritated some folks. They can't hear what we're saying now because we're recording, but we're not broadcasting.
Yeah.
But they are desperate to share something that they think I need to consider. And they just said, you know, well, and I told them, if you want to share something with me, here's my email. It's yada@yahweh.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can send it to me. And, but, you know, make it succinct in writing so that I can review it quickly. I don't want to have to spend hours on it. And they said, oh, perfect. I'll send you a link to two videos and a website. No, I'm not going to the website. I am not going to watch a video. So, you know, if you have to have somebody's video or somebody's website, I'm just not going there. No. You know, if you something that you think is important on the topics related to Yahweh, you want me to consider, put it in writing and support it in writing in a way that we can evaluate it in a reasonably short amount of time. And if it needs more investigation, then we'll invest more in it later. But gosh, don't be asking people to go to see a website and a video.
Sell somebody else's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
enough hours in the day, especially yours.
No. Yeah.
Well, that would be like me bringing something up with someone and then go, well, I'm done. Just go read this and handing them yada yada.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Yeah.
If I'm going to bring it up with you, I'm going to talk with you, and I'm going to defend every point I brought up.
Right.
And regardless of that, yeah, if when we're done, you're interested in more, yeah, I will send you to Yada Yahweh, or I'll send you to Introduction to God, Questioning Paul, whatever we're talking about, I'll send you to one of those. But when I bring it up and I'm talking with you, I'm defending every point myself.
That's the only way to share. I've told people 1,000 times that, you know, I have read Yada Yahweh or Introduction to God, and they want to go share it. I said, no. Don't do that. Do not share it until you own it. When you can share what Yahweh says as something that you understand and that you have a conviction in because you understand it, and you can take the translations once you understand it and share them all day long. But don't go and tell people, well, you need to go read this book, because at that point, you're not the witness. You know, it's exactly what you're doing, JB. So share it as if it's your own, because none of us can claim ownership of Yahweh's testimony. When you own the material, what I mean by own it, I mean you've incorporated the material, you understand the material, it's part of the fabric of your life, it frames your perspective, you are convicted by the testimony, then share it.
Mm-hmm.
But don't share it before then. Yeah, and don't ever say, well, you know, I don't know the answer to that question, but you go, why don't you ask, Craig Hanley? No. No.
Now, if I come across this, I go, okay, I don't know the answer to that. Let me look into that. And then I will.
I'm going to tell you.
I'll pull up my scriptures, I'll start reading, I'll study it, and I will go delve into it till I understand how to answer that question.
Yeah,
I love when I come across a question I don't understand. I hate it and I love it, because it challenges me and it makes me go look into something new.
Right.
But so I love that.
New,
and I hate
And the one caveat is, I'll invest the time to find an answer to something that's important regarding Yahweh and His testimony.
Yeah.
If you ask me a question about 9/11, for example, that you think is interesting because it demonstrates government complicity, the likelihood of me investing a lot of time is nil.
Nil, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't care. It has no
bearing.
Why would I invest the time? What are we going to gain from it?
I told people
the other day that wanted to talk to me about evidence that they claim they have that our government was actually complicit in 9/11 and planned it in advance, as opposed to it being carried out by Muslims and our government just being irrational and ignorant regarding the evidence that was available to be able to prevent it. And I said, so let's just say that I agree with you, which I don't. And let's say the evidence to agree with the government complicity was overwhelming, and it isn't.
What does it change?
Why would I ever want to go there? What are we getting? Why not just talk about the negative aspects of our military, the negative aspects of our politics, and our negative aspects of our economy that are irrefutable and widely known, and say you ought not.
Why would you trust
them? Why not just stay with the stuff that is irrefutable? Why go to the stuff that is a giant credibility thing when it doesn't change? I said, so if I were to agree and have perfect proof that everything you've said is true, how is it going to change the realization that we ought to walk away from religion and politics? Why don't you tell me how it changes that? And if it doesn't change that, what's the purpose?
It clearly doesn't change anything.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter is there are elite forces in the world that have a plan. They are enacting it, and they mean to enact it, and they're going to get billions of people killed. And that's for sure. And you know, if you can say that and know it, it's pretty obvious. You don't accidentally tank an economy and take everything from a people and ship it overseas, and then get them to fund your war machine and go around and accidentally kill millions of people and accidentally create all kinds of millions or enemies while you steal these countries blind. I mean, and then you get these people to because now, turn on your Netflix, turn on whatever, and every other movie is going to be a war movie about valor.
Glorifying war. You'd have to wonder. Are the leaders universally ignorant? Are they
universally
irrational?
Evil.
Or are they universally immoral?
They're all of the above, and they're evil.
Right. And I think immoral is more important than ignorant and irrational.
I saw the Pope came out with his new science advisor is a eugenicist that believes 90% of the population of the world should be killed. Yeah, they're putting that stuff out. That's the Pope. The Pope. That's the lovely Pope. You should be dead, mister.
If they want to start with their church hierarchy, I'm okay with this.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But that's
every
not
Roman,
their position.
Every ordained Roman Catholic cleric could be wiped off the face of the earth tomorrow, and the world would be better the next day.
Sure. Much better.
Do you really care what would be a brighter day.
No, I mean, you look at this stuff, and it's even done in unison. It's even done in unison because the very day he came out, Obama came out with the same statements about overpopulation. The UN came out, and then the Pope with his new science advisor. And I'm sure the Club of Rome was over there, in Milan.
They both talked about global and climate change and how it's the great big threat. No, they're in lockstep. No question about it.
Well, sure.
Well,
sure.
The Pope did that a long time ago. Then he tried to wipe out all the Protestants.
They
had what was called the 30 Years' War. But, as the thing goes, as it's going on, and I mean, you can just, I don't know if you ever look at Drudge. You pull up Drudge 3 days in a row. And the amount of unbelievable news, I mean unreal, surreal news that you get, you could put on a wall. You could fill an entire wall in front of me in a day.
Richard wrote me a letter today, and it was about the New York Times. I had a bunch of experts on to try to talk about how the Islamic State was justifying their kidnap and rape of non-Muslim girls, of children, based upon their from a theological point of view. And there wasn't anyone, who could say, said they're justifying it on the Quran, one person said. And there wasn't one of them that said, well, the reason they're justifying it on the Quran is because the Quran endorses pedophilia, it endorses rape, it endorses kidnap, and Muhammad, who's the author of the Quran was a kidnapper, was a pedophile, and was a rapist. And Sharia law, Islamic law, is based entirely on his life. So we ought not be surprised that the Islamic State is justifying these things in the name of Allah, the Quran, and Islam. Not a single person. These were the experts that they had contributed, and not a single one of them was able to state the plain and obvious truth.
Yeah, because they had to keep the conversation sterile.
How come they didn't call you or you or
correct,
you?
Which means absolutely incorrect.
Right.
Because political correctness means that you continue to deceive. That the only things that are politically correct are those things which are untrue. Incorrect.
Y'all forgive me. I've got to go eat and walk my dog before I get a lot of trouble.
It's been a long day. Yeah, me too. Thank you, guys. It's been a wonderful beginning of the show.
All of you.
Yeah. May God bless you all.